You have to love this song. From the Lego Movie, Everything is Awesome. One of my favorite songs of the year. And Everything is Awesome. And this is our annual year-end movie wrap-up. We're going to do the best. We're going to do the worst. And we'll get some subcategories and all that cool stuff. Eric Childress and Colin Suter, who review movies with me, now on Friday. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Friday mornings. Monday mornings. Yeah, sorry. Are here in studio with me, and they always join me for our annual get-together to go through our lists. How you guys doing?
Very good.
Welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Hey, so what do you think? Let's start with you, Eric. What did you think of the year?
I don't know. doing my top 10 list, I found myself that I thought it was going to be hard to put it together, but it turns out my top 10 list was fairly easy to put together when I finally arranged everything.
Uh-huh.
But everything after that was sort of a jumble. It's like I didn't know, they were all sort of interchangeable to me. And I don't know if that's just a sense of how good the runner-up quality was, or if it was just a sense that things weren't as good as, weren't good enough to make the top 10. There's interesting themes throughout the year that I think we'll be talking about tonight.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be a little while before I can determine exactly what this year was.
Okay. Colin?
I thought it was pretty great, actually. I found that, Eric and I also write for RogerEbert.com, and a few weeks ago we were asked to put together our top 10 list, and of course Eric and I never have it ready, but we both put one together anyway, and I'm assuming we didn't look at each other's.
Nope.
But I've noticed I've made a lot of changes in the last few weeks, just from finally getting around to rewatching a bunch of movies.
Me going, too, man.
Man, this was better than I remembered.
I totally, when I was doing rankings and I was picking the movies, I went back and I watched a lot of them. Caught up with some really crappy ones, too,
mm-hmm.
so I can round out the list of worst. And
no shortage of that.
This is a year that I really tinkered with my list until, the final, the last minute.
Just a few hours ago. Seriously, I swapped rankings. Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, we're going to do the best of and the worst of. We'll start out with the best, as we always do. And I've got 20 total. Is that what you guys have?
Yep.
All right. So we'll start with me. I'll go first, and then we'll go to Colin and then Eric. And number 20 on my list is The Raid 2, which is an extraordinary action movie. And I'm still convinced that like 6-7 people got killed.
Yeah.
Like a couple guys broke their backs.
Mm-hmm, sure.
The fight sequences in both The Raid movies are incredible. But the director...
Gareth Evans
has added great car chase mm-hmm. to his resume, because he didn't have that in the first movie. The first movie was just a bunch of people going upstairs and beating the crap out of each other. There's an extended car chase in The Raid 2 that is pretty stunning.
Yep.
Yes, it is.
So The Raid 2 is number 20 on my list. I loved it. One of my favorite action movies of the year. So
My number 20 is a movie that really surprised me. I saw it just a few weeks ago. I caught up with it on Netflix. Nobody told me about it. It's called We Are the Best. Swedish film about three tween-age girls who decide to form a punk band. And they can't play instruments. They can't write songs. They're pretty terrible. But they just have this boundless enthusiasm for what they want to do, and just sort of, giving the middle finger to authority and all that, and just sort of discovering that in themselves for the very first time. It's a really great coming of age movie. It's a fun movie about music and just, putting together a band with what little talent you have.
Yeah.
And you said it's
on Netflix?
It's on Netflix, yeah. And it's the three actresses in it are really terrific. I enjoy just watching their friendship. It's a great movie about friendship. And, if you have a teenage girl, in your family, make her watch it, because I think she'll love it.
Okay, cool. Yeah. We Are the Best. All right, Eric?
Number 20 on my list is John Michael McDonough's Calvary. Film that played our film festival.
Just missed my top 20.
Yeah. This film about Brendan Gleeson plays...
So good.
Always one of the best
films of
the year.
So good in it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. A priest who, in a confessional, is told by someone, he's not quite sure who it is, someone is going to kill him after a specified time. Not that he's done anything wrong, it's just something that this guy wants to get off his chest for something that the priesthood has done to him in the past. And the movie is a sort of exploration of your own mortality and faith. And the only thing I didn't quite like about it is that it kind of plays out like a whodunit in a way. I think that aspect doesn't quite work as well. But the performance by Brendan Gleeson is really extraordinary, and it's a great movie to just sort of listen to and just watch people interact and discuss really interesting things and talked about ideas that are sort of permeate throughout 2014. This is certainly one of them.
Yeah, terrific performance. One of the best performances of the year, I think. All right, cool. Number 19 on my list is Dead Snow, Red versus Dead.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
It was so good. I liked it better than the first one.
It is better than the first one.
Because the first one was okay. It wasn't great. Yeah. This one was just terrific.
Yeah.
Very entertaining, very funny. For those of you who don't know, it's a Nazi zombie movie.
Yep.
And you can't get enough of those. You guys remember Shockwaves?
I have a copy of Shockwaves.
Shockwaves rules.
Yeah.
I've not seen Shockwaves.
You haven't seen Shockwaves?
I've not seen Shockwaves.
I've got it. I haven't watched it yet.
It's underwater zombie Nazis.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Peter Cushing's in it, for God's sake.
Oh, all right.
With, what's her name?
From?
Body Snatchers.
What's her name?
Brooke Adams.
So you know that's Monk's wife?
Yes.
Or what's his name?
Tony Shalhoub.
Tony Shalhoub. That's right. That's his wife. I didn't realize that until I was watching the Emmys one year. And he was nominated for Monk, and she was sitting next to him, and I was like, what the hell's going on there?
And he won the Emmy, and she screamed at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, pointed at him.
She pointed at him and screamed and did that crazy thing with her eyes.
Yes.
Okay, so Dead Snow, Red versus Dead, number 19 on my list, if you want to see a very entertaining, very original, very funny Nazi zombie movie, I highly recommend it. Great cast, too.
One of the best uses of a Bonnie Tyler song ever.
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay, next.
The complete opposite end of the spectrum from that. It's a delightful animated film that was an Academy Award nominee this year for last year, but doesn't, whatever. It's a 2014 film for us. Ernest and Celestine, which is this movie about a forbidden friendship between a mouse and a bear. Really just gorgeous animation, like storybook animation, and really touching, really funny, really kind of weird at times. It's kind of a dark side to it, you know, that all the best children's books have. You know, it's just kind of one of those undiscovered gems from this year that, you know, I know it got attention last year for you know, being an Academy Award nominee, but everyone's kind of forgotten about it. But people should check it out.
Okay. All right. Next.
Number 19 on my list is Cheap Thrills. the wonderfully dark, twisted comedy about two old friends who are pitted against each other in this game by this eccentric rich guy and his trying to satisfy his equally crazy wife, with starring the great Pat Healy, a film that I think is rich in satire about the sort of the reality television show culture that we have and the way everyone's trying to sort of one up each other and doing it for cash, and has maybe the best final shot of the year. One of them, certainly. There's a list, but Cheap Thrills is my number 19.
It's not going to be the last time we hear about
that.
Okay, number 18 on my list is Gone Girl.
Oh, we have a match.
We have a match.
Oh, yes.
All right, well, tell everybody about Gone Girl.
Okay. This is the David Fincher movie with Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike, and it's just this crazy sort of thriller about Ben Affleck's wife gone missing.
Right.
Well, maybe she's not missing. There's so many twists and turns in this thing. I don't even remember all of the twists and turns in this film. I only got to see it once.
Me too. I've only seen it once. Yeah.
Yeah. So it might have been higher if I'd seen it again. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it just has this, the feeling of watching this movie is sort of like the same feeling you have when you're binge watching a TV show that you can't get enough of and you want to see what happens next. And even when the movie's over, you want to know what happens next.
Yeah.
It's that kind of addictive,
and it's beautifully watching. Made. Beautifully made film.
Beautifully shot. It's awesome.
Oh, it's David Fincher, man. I mean, you know, when you go to see a David Fincher movie, you know you're going to see quality, and it's going to look good, and technically it's going to be amazing.
At the very least, technically it'll be amazing.
Absolutely.
Even if the movie itself is flawed.
Yeah. You know? Right. I mean, the only movie that he's made that I don't like is Benjamin Button. Mm. That's the only movie. I even like Alien 3. I'll back Alien 3.
You and Sergio.
But yeah, I mean, but Benjamin Button is the only one that I was like that I actively dislike. All the every other one of his movies, I think
either love his movies or kind of like them.
Really?
Yeah, I got four movies very high on my list, and others that are
Yeah. All right. What's on your list next?
Number 18, a movie that actually jumped up on my list the second time I saw it. It's Edge of Tomorrow. the Tom Cruise science fiction film that, you know, the first time around, it's a really fun ride, a science fiction film that has no qualms that it's borrowing from Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the point of it, because the whole idea of the sort of the repetitive nature that Tom Cruise is going through not only sort of plays into the sort of the video game culture that more than any other the sort of the video game adaptations that we've seen, here is an original film that borrowed from many other sources and created a sort of a video game experience on the big screen that also, to me, the second time around was sort of representing the repetitive nature of the sort of the blockbuster culture that we have, the big summer movie. And here was a movie that did it with a lot of laughs. A lot of some winking satire, some terrific action, and Tom Cruise, and Emily Blunt, for God's sakes. But Tom Cruise just proves why he's one of the best movie stars we have on the planet. He's always watchable, even in a flawed movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, Edge of Tomorrow, my number 18.
It's a damn shame how that movie, the fate of that movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It should have been one of the biggest blockbusters of the year.
Yeah.
And then to make it more confusing, they change a title for the DVD release, or they try to give it a second title to make it all
Live, Die, Repeat?
The third title, actually, because the original title of the movie was called All You Need Is Kill. And then it was changed to Edge of Tomorrow, a very bland, generic title, and now it's Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow.
All right, number 17 on my list is another movie that deserved to be a blockbuster, Snowpiercer.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best action movies of the year. Real simple premise, just going, walking through a train and beating the crap out of people. you know, it's the poor versus the rich, and I just thought it was great. It's beautifully made. It's kind of insane. Tilda Swinton is certainly insane in it.
Yes, yep.
Completely out of control, nuts. Chris Evans, your Captain America, is in it. And I just loved it from beginning to end. Just a really original premise, really well done. And Snowpiercer, terrific action movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, your movie takes place entirely on a train. My 17 takes its place entirely in a car. And that movie is Locke. Tom Hardy, it's a one-man show. He's in his car. He's driving to see his girlfriend who's giving, or not his girlfriend, his mistress, who's having a baby, and he's dealing with his wife, his kids, his job, which is on the line, and his inner demons as well. It's the most insane car drive anybody can imagine having, and he does this, he gives the performance where he has to just remain cool and calm throughout the whole thing, and any one of us would have gone insane after the first 10 minutes of this film. Or being this character. Stephen Knight directed it and did an amazing job with the editing in this thing, making it feel like a thriller. You know, we've had a lot of these sort of one-man, one-woman show kind of movies, you know, Robert Redford and All Is Lost, James Franco and 127 Hours. And if you want to, I don't know if you count...
Buried,
right?
Yeah.
If you can sort of say Gravity, but I kind of don't, not in this group. This one is kind of my favorite of the four. Tom Hardy, I think, is just great. And it's Locke, Locke, everybody.
Got it. All right, next.
Number 17 is How to Train Your Dragon 2, a terrific sequel to a great animated film that's really turning out to be what could be a really terrific trilogy of films. A sequel that didn't just sort of give you another adventure, but expanded upon the original story and expanded the mythology of it. And you really sort of get the sense that the boy and his dragon are growing up. It has that sort of that same feel that the Harry Potter movies had, that we watch these characters grow up over time, and by the end of this one, he's just about on the verge of manhood. And I think, you know, there's some interesting kind of almost really shocking choices that are made in the movie. Might, you know, scare little kids, but, you know, again, we come to this idea of death throughout 2014, and this movie explored it in a really beautiful and a sad way. So number 17, How to Train Your Dragon 2.
All right, cool. We got to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with our lists. Colin and Eric are here. We're doing our best of, worst of, and all other cool stuff. It's our annual year-end film show, and we'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. We'll come back with more. We'll be right back. Nick DiGilio here. From the movie that Eric just mentioned before the break, How to Train Your Dragon 2, we're listening to music from all the movies from 2000, not all the movies, but many movies from 2014. And that's what we're doing. We're wrapping up the year. The best of, the worst of, and all kinds of other cool things here on our annual film show with Eric and Colin. We were in the middle of knocking out our top list, and we're at number 16. So let me go at number 16. On my list is The Lego Movie, which is incredibly entertaining, really funny, very, very, very clever, and loaded with stuff. Like, I mean, stuff that you, like, I saw it twice, and I still think I've missed a ton. I mean, it's like every frame is jammed with, like, visual jokes and gags and, like, really, really clever stuff. And I went in, you know, when did it come out? April?
February.
It came out in February.
February, yeah.
Okay, I didn't expect much.
Nobody did.
No,
because like I don't understand. I was still very confused about the whole Lego thing, mm-hmm. like you know the Lego Star Wars and Lego all yeah. the. I was always like, what is that? I don't understand this. And so when I went into the movie, I was like, eh, whatever, man. Yeah. Okay, it'll be a time. I was so entertained by the Lego movie. It's funny. It's really original, and some of the voice work is phenomenal. Liam Neeson, Chris Pratt, who had a hell of a year.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a very entertaining movie. One of the biggest surprises of the year is the Lego movie.
Clearly.
One of the biggest surprises of the year. Okay, Colin, 16.
My number 16 is a movie I'm sure we're going to hear about later, and that's Birdman. The Michael Keaton, Edward Norton,
Emma Stone, Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, just like everybody's in this thing. And it's, you know, just an amazing piece of cinema. The one take thing, the whole movie sort of being in one take, is extraordinary to watch, even if they are cheating. I don't care. It's cool. I love it. And just anchored by, you know, just a great resurgence from, you know, Michael Keaton. And going up against Edward Norton, who kind of steals every scene that he's in, but not too much. Everybody shines in this movie, and it's. We'll hear more about it, so I'm not going to steal anybody's thunder. So it's Birdman.
Okay.
Well, we go from what is probably my favorite male performance of the year to my second favorite male performance of the year, and that's Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler. One of the creepiest performances I've seen in some time. A performance that was so creepy, my mom was yelling at the screen when we were watching it a second time. Oh my God, he's so creepy. But really, you know, it wants to be a satire of sort of the media culture. To me, this is a character study about this character who becomes this crime, you know, videographer and selling it to the highest bidder. And I think, you know, we've all heard the line, if it bleeds, it leads. Where this movie sort of ends up and the sort of the progression of this character from, you know, a petty thief to a top dog in a major news organization is really quite frightening. The movie's intense. It's funny. It's very creepy. And someone asked me if we saw the movie, just like, oh, is it set up for a sequel? And I said, well, we're living the sequel right now. So Nightcrawler is my number 16.
Okay. All right, let's get into the top 15. Here we go. Number 15 on my list is The Skeleton Twins. Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig, who you know, obviously worked together many times on SNL, and they've been in a bunch of movies together as well.
Yeah.
But this is a complete departure for both of them, especially Hader. They play estranged twins, both suicidal, Bill Hader attempts suicide at the beginning of the film. And actually, Kristen Wiig is about to. She's got a handful of pills at one point when she gets the phone call saying her brother is in the hospital because he tried to kill himself. So during his recovery, Hader's recovery, he just got broken up, but somebody dumped him. He's gay, and his boyfriend left him. So while he's recuperating, that you know, Kristen Wiig says, "Why don't you move in with us?" And she's married to Luke Wilson, and it's about this estranged brother and sister who bond after a long period of time. Very traumatic stuff. Kristen Wiig is kind of screwed up. She's like having an affair, and she had many affairs.
Many.
And it's just about this relationship between Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig, and we know that those two can work well together. But this is just kind of this is just off the charts good. And I mean, I really want to emphasize how great Bill Hader is in this movie.
Terrific, yeah.
Because it could have gone Stefan.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it could have gone, but he's so good in it. It's such a beautiful performance. And there is a scene in this movie where they lip sync a song.
Yeah.
That is beautiful and hilarious and spectacular.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Skeleton Twins, it's number 15 on my list.
My number 15 is Citizen Four, a documentary about Edward Snowden. I mean, really, I mean, these guys were in the room with Edward Snowden as he was, you know, about to reveal all this stuff. And just being the fly on the wall for that was just one of the most amazing things I've seen this year. Just being sort of getting, you know, the first person, you know, first hand look at what it's like to just, you know, be the whistleblower and deal with the fallout from that and having the courage to do so. And, you know, it's also interesting to see how, you know, these documentary filmmakers got a big story that, you know, the actual media was not privy to until after the fact. Is really just an amazing movie to watch, beautifully structured, beautifully put together by Laurie Poitras. Just a really an engrossing movie, one of the best.
Okay.
15 is a movie that I watched again, actually just this very morning, to make sure that my appreciation for it at Sundance was warranted, considering that a lot of people had their knives sharpened for it, in my opinion. And that's Zach Braff's Wish I Was Here, a film that I cannot deny has some personal stake in the story that he tells, the story of a father who's passing away. And the sort of the struggles he's having with his own children and trying to raise them and find knowing where he's at in his own life, the sort of this idea between the reality and fantasy of, you know, your past and where you are as in fatherhood and how to teach your children about spirituality and the sort of the next phase of our own evolution. And a lot of people compare it to Garden State. Well, you should compare it to Garden State because it's the same guy who made it. And, you know, if a lot of his strengths and weaknesses in that film are present here, well, then so be it. But this is a film that really it spoke to me personally. And watching it again, I think that it got kind of an unfair rap when people saw it because it was this whole crowdfunded thing. And he, you know, he got a lot of people to put up money to make this thing after he's had several.
Yeah, he had a there was a big backlash because of the Kickstarter thing.
Yes, a huge. Mm-hmm. I mean, people there were.
I think the movie was doomed from the get go.
Did you see it?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
No, not really.
Okay.
But I thought it was seriously, you know, like the whole Kickstarter thing. I was like, nobody's going to see this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people are going to slam the hell out of it just because he used Kickstarter.
Right. And it was evident to me at the Sundance screening. And I admit my personal stake in the movie, but I watching it again the second time, I found that there's a lot of really interesting ideas in the movie that a lot of filmmakers just don't explore very well, and I thought he did a really, really nice job with it. So,
okay,
number 15.
All right, number 14 on my list. I know that this is probably very in you guys' opinions. I probably put this way too low. But 14 on the list is Life Itself, the documentary about Roger Ebert. I know we're going to hear more about it from you guys. I have no doubt in my mind. It's hard to be objective because I knew him. Do you know what I mean? But it's an extraordinary movie. I mean, it really, and no holds barred, man. I mean, you know, you get to see stuff in this movie. It's uncomfortable to watch. Steve James made it, who has made extraordinary documentaries, one of the best documentary filmmakers working today. And it was an all-access pass to the world of Roger Ebert, and it just you know, explored his great life. It was a great, it's a terrific movie about a great man, and So I know we're going to hear about it more later. So let's just move on. That was number 14, Life Itself.
My number 14 is a film called The Congress, which also played at our festival this year. Ari Folman's follow-up to Waltz with Bashir starts out first hour as live action, second hour as animation. It's Robin Wright playing Robin Wright, and she's, you know, she's sort of at a point in her career where she's not getting good roles anymore. But she's the studios, Miramount Studios, convince her to have her likeness digitized for life, so that she can be an action star or be, you know, whatever crazy movie she wants to be in, or do Resident Evil type films, which is what it looks like in this film. And then the second half is this crazy animated, otherworldly adventure that sort of mixes Ralph Bakshi with Yellow Submarine with all kinds of, you know, crazy animation influences coming together for a film that requires a couple viewings to to really, you know, get a grip on it. But it's a fascinating piece of work about Hollywood, about identity. It's one of the best, and this was a really, we've mentioned a few science fiction films this year. This really was a strong year for science fiction. And this one kind of got lost in the shuffle, even in the art house circuit. But people should check it out. It's called The Congress, and Harvey Keitel and John Hamm are in it too.
Okay. All right, next.
Number 14 on my list seems to be the forgotten movie of this year. I really liked this movie very early in the year, and I think it had kind of a mixed response to some people. But Darren Aronofsky's Noah, which, you know, especially compared to, you know, all the hype, or not hype, but the press that Exodus, Gods and Kings have gotten recently. You know, here's a film that, you know, was equal parts spectacle and examination of, you know, this story that we all, you know in one form or another, and a film that, you know, chose not to just go just do the spectacle, but give us sort of this, again, sort of an examination of faith in the creator, faith in each other, faith in family. And the real interesting idea that the movie puts forth is, you know, maybe we're not supposed to make it. And that's a real interesting and troubling aspect that really kind of had me on edge throughout the film. I think it's the best thing Russell Crowe has done in many years, performance-wise.
Probably, I would say, since Cinderella Man.
I agree. I think that's the one I use too. I mean, there are a lot of films that, you know, a lot of these faith-based films are coming out now, and it seems like the ones that actually challenge faith. Not attacking it, but challenge it. Movies like Noah and Calvary, these are the movies that tend to get the most controversy, when some other movies that you'll probably hear me talk about later get a lot of box office because they don't challenge you at all. So Noah was number 14.
All right. I'll give you mine, then we got to take a break. Number 13 on my list is Godzilla. I loved this movie. I love Godzilla. He rules. And it was the first time I saw it in the IMAX, and it just blew my mind. I'm a big Godzilla fan anyway. I spent most of Christmas watching El Rey. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Rey, Robert Rodriguez's network. Yeah. They did like 48 hours of Godzilla.
Okay.
So instead of Christmas Story this year, I went with Godzilla movies. So I've been a Godzilla fan my whole life, and I just thought the effects were great. And I don't know where the hell, I mean, this cast...
Great cast
yeah. for just a big, you know, this to me, Godzilla is what a big blockbuster summer movie should be. I was entertained by it. I think it's smart. I think it's really well acted. I mean, obviously, you got a really great cast.
It's a supporting cast.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the leads are a little wasted.
You don't like that dude from Badass.
Well, no, he sucks.
What's his name?
Aaron Johnson.
Aaron Johnson.
He's transparent, dude.
Okay. He didn't bother me. Cranston was amazing in it.
Yes.
You know, but I thought it was great. Ken Watanabe.
The line of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Let them fight.
Let them fight.
Absolutely. And then they do, man.
Yeah.
And they tear it up. Great effects. Great. For me, an absolute perfect summer blockbuster, in my opinion. So Godzilla is number 13. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get you guys your choices for 13 and continue up the list of the best movies of the year. It's Nick DiGilio, Colin Suter, Eric Childress live in studio with me right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios on the 7th floor. And this is from one of the best soundtracks of the year, by the way. Guardians of the Galaxy, because it's all like 70s stuff, mm-hmm. and I love that. And I had read somewhere that the studio was really concerned that that was the soundtrack.
That doesn't surprise me.
They were like, no, nobody's gonna listen to this stuff. And then, you know, it ends up making $8 trillion. Yeah, right. It was like the biggest soundtrack of the year. So Guardians of the Galaxy. One of the things about Guardians of the Galaxy that surprised me was just how funny it was.
It's a funny movie.
I mean, it's really funny. Yeah. So, all right, well, there you go. We just went through our list. Why don't we give everybody a little quick update on what we got so far? We're doing our top 20, and we're on to number... You guys are about to do 13. So here are mine. 20 is The Raid 2. 19 is Dead Snow, Red versus Dead. 18 is Gone Girl. 17 is Snowpiercer. 16 is The Lego Movie. 15 is The Skeleton Twins. 14, Life Itself. And 13, Godzilla. And Colin, what about you?
20, We Are the Best. 19, Ernest and Celestine. 18, Gone Girl. 19, Locke. 16, Birdman. 15, Citizen Four. 14, The Congress.
For me, number 20 is Calvary. 19, Cheap Thrills. 18, Edge of Tomorrow. 17, How to Train Your Dragon 2. 16, Nightcrawler. 15, Wish I Was Here. And 14, Noah.
All right. All right, Colin, number 13.
13 is a movie that I'm not sure if it's out here yet, but it's A Most Violent Year. J.C. Chandler's third film, I think it's his third. He did All Is Lost and Margin Call.
Margin Call.
And this is it out yet or no? In Chicago?
Not yet.
Okay.
I think it opens next week.
Does it open next week?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this movie takes place in the late 70s, early 80s.
81.
81, right. Yeah. Oscar Isaac plays a guy who's, you know, trying to get his oil company off the ground, but has to deal with a lot of competitors and thugs who are hijacking his trucks, and he's trying to figure out who's behind it all. excuse me. Jessica Chastain plays his wife in another amazing performance. Mm-hmm. I mean, she is on having like the best
she's a total badass in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not playing your stereotypical Brooklyn housewife.
No.
It's not what you think. And Albert Brooks has a great supporting role in it with straight hair.
I was just going to say that was the most distracting thing
yes.
for me was what the hell's going on with Albert Brooks's hair?
Yeah. but he's great, and it's good to see Albert Brooks sort of having this second career now as a supporting player in these gritty dramas.
Yeah,
I hope he does more of it. Yeah. So yeah, in A Most Violent Year, you know, and it's total throwback to Sidney Lumet films. That's gonna be that, you're gonna hear that a lot from a lot of critics, mm-hmm. and it's true, and it's warranted, and it's justified.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Okay.
Number 13 has been mentioned already. It was Colin's number 14. It's the Congress. Oh. Ari Folman's really interesting, beautiful science fiction film. The first hour of this movie, when it's set in the real world of the future, I think it's some of the best stuff I saw all year. Some of my favorite stuff is in the first hour of this movie. And then, you know, the animation stuff, it gets trippy, and you know, it really sort of, you know, makes the brain work overtime on exactly, you know, on a few of its ideas. It's a very sad film too, while also being it's really funny in the first half, and it was kind of sad in the second half. Paul Giamatti's also in the film has a small part, but everything Colin said, I absolutely echo. It's my number 13, The Congress.
Okay, number 12 was just mentioned, A Most Violent Year.
All right,
number 12, and we just talked a little bit about it. And yeah, it is. Totally like a tribute to Lumet, and I don't think there's an apology that needs to be made.
No.
Well, Oscar,
1981, for God's sake.
In New York City. It's a New York City movie, crime drama set in the early 80s, of course.
I think Prince of the City is going the other way.
Exactly. Jessica Chastain, as we mentioned, is great. There's a cast of, I mean, a lot of people I've never seen before in this movie. Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain and Albert Brooks are probably the only...
They're big names, but there are other. I mean, Alessandro Nivola's in it.
Yeah.
And,
oh yeah, the guy,
the boy from The Wire.
Yeah.
What? Isn't that one guy from The Wire?
Which guy?
The guy, the union guy. You guys
no,
he's not in The Wire.
No, that's not
really.
Him. Yeah.
I thought that was another guy in The Wire.
No, it's not him.
Okay.
Never mind. But anyway, really terrific movie, and I got to say, it's just a great crime thriller, really well done, captures the time period perfectly. Without being, overtly corny, you mm-hmm. know, because of fashions in 1981 and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I got to say, Oscar Isaac is tremendous in this movie. It's a great performance, and he's channeling Al Pacino. I mean, it's a total, you know, it's a yeah. Sidney Lumet movie with an Al Pacino lead. And I've got no problem with that whatsoever. Mm. I think it's a terrific movie. And I've not liked this guy's other two movies.
I like All Is Lost. I'm not a fan of Margin Call at all.
Margin Call, All Is Lost I thought was okay. Yeah. But this is like, he knocked it out of the park with this thing. And wrote and directed it. And I really liked it a lot. It's A Most Violent Year, number 12.
My number 12 is a return to form for one of my favorite directors, David Gordon Green. My number 12 is Joe, which also represents a return to form, although what didn't last very long.
Nope.
For Nicolas Cage, who grew a beard and gave, you know, the best performance of the in the last 15 years for him. And then that sort of ended in October. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
but. It's sort of like last year's movie Mud. It's that same kind of dynamic where a kid sort of is sort of on his own, played by Ty Sheridan again.
Yep.
And befriends an older guy who, you know, kind of teaches him a little bit about life, and in this case about hard work and about, you know, just kind of, you know, trying to make it on your own. Because his dad is a raging alcoholic like I've never seen in a movie before. It's gritty. It's kind of hard to watch at times, but it is David Gordon Green back in full form, I hope. Well, I hear his next one isn't getting the best response from the festival circuit, according to Eric, what he's told me.
That's what I've heard.
All right. Well, you know what? If it's not another Your Highness, I'll take it. I don't care. So my number 12 is Joe.
Okay.
My number 12 is a film that hasn't opened in Chicago yet, and I think it's only had a limited run in some parts of the country. It's Xavier Dolan's Mommy. This is a film stars Anne Dorval as a mom whose teenage son is in and out of institutions. He's got a lot of chemical imbalance issues and some anger issues, and he's always acting out and fighting and causing problems. The institutions won't keep him anymore, so she's got to bring him home. And it's this, you know, this sort of this dynamic, this back and forth of, you know, trying to control this kid in this environment. And then it also involves this third party, this woman across the street who is a substitute teacher who she brings in to sort of help keep him, you know, under control and sort of homeschool him as well. It's a beautiful film. It's absolutely heartbreaking. To watch, it's one of the really great films in recent memory about parenthood, motherhood, fatherhood, you know, whatever. And the performances are top notch. Suzanne Clement, who plays the substitute teacher, has a scene with the kid about midway through the movie that just floored me, and the ending floored me as well. So this is one to really look out for. I think it was actually just disqualified from foreign language consideration, so you're not going to probably see it at the Oscars either. But Mommy is definitely a film to keep an eye out for.
All right, cool.
When does it open?
January 30th.
Okay.
Cool. Keep an eye out for that. That's called Mommy. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back after the news, we'll reveal our top 11 best movies. We've got the worst movies and a whole bunch of subcategories. We do this every year. It's the annual movie wrap-up show with Eric and Colin, and we'll do this again. We'll come back after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And this is music from Birdman, one of the most unique music scores of the year.
It was a good year for drums.
And it certainly was. But, you know, did you know that the Academy is not accepting this?
Yeah.
It's one of the best scores of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, I don't know.
So we're counting down our favorite movies of the year, and we're up to number 11. And then we'll do a quick recap once we get to the top 10. Okay, so number 11 on my list is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yep.
I love these movies. And I never expect, I mean, it, like, again, as we all know, Rise, of the Planet of the Apes was one of the biggest surprises from a couple of years ago. Like, I mean, came out in August. I was like, what the hell's going on? This is great. Great follow-up. And, you know, it's a damn shame that, like, you know, Andy Serkis is going to be not honored for his great performance. Because it's a great performance. It truly is a great performance. Yeah. It's exciting. Really well made. Great special effects. These are just great movies. And I hope they make Apes movies now forever.
As long as they keep up with this quality.
Absolutely. Really terrific stuff. And again, like Godzilla, a great summer blockbuster as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. These Godzilla and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes are the kind of movies that I want to see in the summer if it's, you know, that kind of thing.
If we did a 25, Dawn would probably be on my list.
Okay. Yeah, so 11, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Okay.
My number 11 is a movie called Ida. It's a Polish film, came out in spring of this year, and it's about a woman in a convent who learns that she was actually born to Jewish parents who were killed in the Holocaust. So she's trying to figure out, trying to learn more about them. When we fill out our awards ballots every year, I mean, some categories are harder to fill out than others because there's an abundance of choices. And this year for cinematography, there were so many amazingly shot films. This one for me was the best. It's black and white. Every shot in this movie could be framed and put on a wall as a work of art. There's two cinematographers for this film. I'm not even going to try to pronounce their names. But it's as far as visually, I mean, it's a very beautifully acted, very moving film. But I mean, visually, this movie is a knockout. It's called Ida, and it is streaming on Netflix.
Cool.
Okay, my number 11 is Force Majeure, which to me is kind of like a 2-hour meditation of a Seinfeld episode. In a way, it's a story of a family of four, mother, father, and their two young children at a ski resort. And one morning at breakfast, an avalanche occurs. And the aftermath of that avalanche is not in a sort of a disaster film realm, but rather the actions of the father, what he did during the avalanche to keep or not keep his family safe becomes a question throughout the rest of the film, and done so not in a film that you would expect where they're just going to be arguing about that for the entire movie, but the idea of the sort of the questioning of his manhood and the sort of the uncomfortable times that the conversation has brought up to other parties that they're with. This movie is wonderfully funny. A great sort of examination of paternal responsibilities and bravery in the face of real opposition. It's really a really dark, darkly funny film that, again, it reminded me of the episode where George busts out of the fire in Seinfeld. With Jon Favreau as the clown. Yeah. You're living in the past, man. So Force Majeure, my number 11.
Okay, cool. All right, let's recap real quick for those people who are just tuning in. Our bottom 10, our top, 20. Here we go. Number 20 on my list is The Raid 2, 19 Dead Snow, Red versus Dead, 18 Gone Girl, 17 Snowpiercer, 16 The Lego Movie, 15 The Skeleton Twins, 14 Life Itself, 13 Godzilla, 12 A Most Violent Year, and 11 Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Colin?
20 We Are the Best, 19 Ernest and Celestine, 18 Gone Girl, 17 Locke, 16 Birdman, 15 Citizen 4, 14 The Congress, 13 Most Violent Year, 12 Joe, 11 Ida.
For me, number 20 is Calvary, 19 Cheap Thrills, 18 Edge of Tomorrow, 17 How to Train Your Dragon 2, 16 Nightcrawler, 15 Wish I Was Here, 14 Noah, 13 The Congress, 12 Mommy, and 11 Force Majeure.
Okay, here we go, top 10. Number 10 on my list has been mentioned. It's Nightcrawler. You can't say enough about Gyllenhaal's performance in this movie. I watched it twice in 2 days.
Me too.
And I was just kind of stunned by the whole thing. Really well made, really intense. It's funny. And the central performance by Jake Gyllenhaal is just extraordinary. I mean, it's just the best work he's done in years. Well, I mean, he's good. He's constantly good. But this just goes above and beyond general creepiness. So Nightcrawler, number 10 on my list. A really, really terrific, dark, twisted movie.
And that's in the same year as Enemy.
Yeah.
My number 10 is a movie that I never thought would even make my top 20, but when I saw it again, it just shot up there. It's How to Train Your Dragon 2. You know, this is, you know, Nick, you were saying what you want in a blockbuster. Well, this is what I want in an animated blockbuster. This is a movie that goes above and beyond the Call of Duty for an animated film aimed at kids. This is just a beautiful, exciting, really funny movie that improves on the original, even though the original's great, but I think this one's even better. And it has the courage to do something in the third act that a lot of movies, you know, aimed at young people would not have the courage to do. And I'm talking about something that happens to a major character. It is also has one of the most romantic moments of any movie this year, maybe the most romantic. And it's just, I'm in love with this whole series. I cannot wait for part 3. And this movie, just when I saw it a second time, I was like, this was not appreciated enough. People didn't go see it enough, I don't think. It did okay, but
it didn't
not
do as well as the original. It did very well worldwide. It did make, it was a success.
Okay.
For some reason, it did not do as well here in the U.S.
It should have done better.
Yeah.
And people should, you know, rent it, I guess.
Yeah, it's a terrific movie.
It's great.
Beautiful looking movie, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Okay, next.
Number 10 on my list is Wild. And here we go again, coming around to the theme of how we deal with tragedy in our lives. And this is a true story. Reese Witherspoon plays a woman named Cheryl Strayed who's has some tragic events in her past, and it leads her down a path of self-destruction, affairs, drugs, and it leads her to this point where she's going to walk the Pacific Coast Trail, this 1,100-mile walk, you know, between like California to Canada or Mexico to Canada, I forget what it is. But it's her, you know, her and her thoughts. The way the movie presents the sort of the flashback structure was we learn what led her to this point, both, you know, the good and the bad moments of her life, mostly the bad moments. But this is I love the way this film is structured. I know that there's another actress that people really want to win an Oscar this year, but to me, Reese Witherspoon gives the best female for performance of the year. And watching it a second time, I was struck by how much silence there is. I mean, she does a lot of voiceover work, but a lot of her performance is done without words. There's a lot of moments just on her face, and we see everything that she's feeling and experience in the past, in the future, in the present, just all there in her expressions. I think this is a really beautiful movie. It's always nice when Reese Witherspoon gets to give a performance like this because she really is one of our great actresses. And it's nice when she's not doing these bad rom-coms in between movies like Election and Walk the Line and this. That's the company it keeps. Wild.
Okay. All right, Wild. Number 9 is a movie that I was moving around on my list a lot. And number 9 on my list is Boyhood, the Richard Linklater film. Remarkable in many ways, and I'm sure that I'm not going to be the only person to mention it. And I know Eric won't.
Nope.
But but I have a feeling that Colin will. And that, for those people who aren't aware, he made this over the course of 13 years and shot this kid at the age of 6 until he was 18. And they would make the movie each year. They would get together and make the movie. And Ethan Hawke is terrific in it as well. It's a remarkable piece of work and a great experiment that I think pays off in spades. Richard Linklater's Boyhood, number 9 on my list.
My number 9 is Selma, the Martin Luther King film that just came out. I sort of looked at this as like the anti-biopic. You know, it's not a cradle to the grave thing. It doesn't make Martin Luther King into a saint. It's just about, you know, his work, you know, what's in the, you know, the marches in Selma, Alabama. And it doesn't go through the usual motions of Ernie directed it, and her use of, you know, how she shoots it, how she uses score, how it's edited. When I was watching it, it sort of was hard to believe that it was a big studio film. This is a really terrific, really moving, powerful film that, you know, could have been a formulaic biopic that has a great central performance but a flawed script. We got so many of those this year, and it was really great to see something that was realized in such a way that really just separated itself from all these other, you know, Theory of Tomorrow, or, you know, what, the Theory of Everything, Imitation Game, you know, all these other kinds of movies that just sort of, okay, great performance, not a great movie. This is great all around. Selma.
Okay.
Well, I got another biopic as well that I think you might agree is a pretty good one. Not a Cradle to the Grave one, and one of the people involved has expressed unfavorable feelings about the film recently, but we're talking about Foxcatcher, Bennett Miller's story about the Schultz brothers, the Olympic wrestlers, and their twisted relationship with the billionaire John DuPont. Bennett Miller's made Capote and Moneyball, and this story, I think, fits right into this theme that he's been exploring about the sort of the exploitation of the class system, for better or worse. And this is a story about a really eccentric billionaire who sees these two guys, or at least one of them, as a sort of the key to rebuilding the glory of America, and at least his vision of America. The performances, Steve Carell obviously has gotten a lot of press for his dramatic work in the film. He's very good. Mark Ruffalo is going to be nominated. He's terrific as the older brother. But I think Channing Tatum is the star of this movie. I think it's the best performance he's ever given. I think he's fantastic to watch in this movie. Who's the one that hates the movie now? Dave Schultz or Mark Schultz?
Oh,
Whoever Channing Tatum plays,
right?
Yeah, he's, you know, he should be, you know, I know it's not the most flattering of portraits, but you feel real sympathy for this character, and that alone should shut him up. it's really intense film, a very cold film, but I think an interesting one. And Bennett Miller, I think, is a very interesting director. Foxcatcher is my number 9.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish off the best, we'll go to the worst, and then we've got a whole bunch of subcategories as well. It's Nick DiGilio, Eric and Colin are here in our yearly movie review. Yeah. We're not talking about Mannequin.
The Academy Award nominated Mannequin.
Yes.
Was this
nominated for Academy Award?
Yes. This song was?
Yeah.
Yes.
Can I tell you a little quick story about the song, by the way, and why my reaction at Sundance was incredibly hilarious? My sister and I performed the song in a talent show in seventh grade.
Please tell me there's video of this.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, so when this song gets whipped out halfway through this movie, and
we're talking about
there,
the Skeleton Twins.
And I'm sitting there at Sundance watching this, and a brother and sister are singing this of all songs that they could pick. I lost it in the theater.
Well, absolutely, it's a wonderful moment, even if you don't have a connection, personal connection to it.
I bought the film for my sisters for Christmas.
Oh, that's cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, what's on my list? Yep. Mission number 15. Okay, we're doing our top 10 movies now, and we're up to number 8. And so number 8 on my list is another one that jumped into the top 10 after seeing it a second time. It's Obvious Child, which, you know, you were talking about Reese Witherspoon in Wild. Mm-hmm. For me, Jenny Slate is the performance of the year, the female performance of the year. And it's a breakout role. I mean, it's just, you know, she owns that movie. About a stand-up comedian, has a one-night stand, ends up pregnant, and then it becomes about what she's going to do and get an abortion. It's funny, beautifully acted, and I think it's entertaining from beginning to end. And again, I can't say enough about Jenny Slate. I mean, she owns the movie, and it's a great performance, and she's always been funny. You know, she's great on Parks and Rec. She's hilarious on Parks and Rec. She was good on SNL, and she also has the distinction of being the her first night on the show on SNL. She drops an F-bomb.
Yeah.
And didn't get fired, oddly. They fired Charles Rocket,
yeah,
but they didn't fire her. So anyway, Obvious Child. Is it out on DVD?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. I would highly recommend it to everyone. And if you just want to see the breakout performance of the year, as far as I'm concerned, Jenny Slate in Obvious Child, number eight.
My number eight is not quite an easy movie to recommend to everybody, but it's a movie that I love, and it's Under the Skin. Jonathan Glazer's crazy science fiction movie with Scarlett Johansson as the woman who fell to Earth. And I use that reference just because the movie is very evocative of, you know, a lot of kind of weird 70s sci-fi movies. It's more about mood. It's not really about, you know, it's sort of this year's Upstream Color. You know, it's a movie that's very confounding and very, everybody has a different interpretation of what it all means, and nobody's wrong.
Nobody's right either.
Oh, please. And I think it's an extraordinary visual piece of work. I think Scarlett Johansson is amazing in it. There's a lot to think about when it's over. It rewards with repeat viewings. An amazing movie to watch. Under the Skin.
Okay.
Not the easiest movie to recommend to people.
Keep trying, Colin.
Don't
just
expect big payoffs, but it's a very interesting, strange film.
You're not alone. I am.
I know that.
Number eight is a film that I'm certain we're going to be hearing some more about. It's Whiplash. Damien Chazelle's crazily alive film about this kid who wants to be a jazz drummer and the battle of wills that he has with his teacher, played by J.K. Simmons, who is going to win an Oscar.
If he doesn't win the Academy Award, seriously, I'm taking hostage.
It's already happened.
Seriously.
It's already, already
it's
name printed.
Ridiculous.
They already have it imprinted on the plaque. It's going to happen. Don't worry about it. I've used the word alive already, and it's a word that sometimes gets overused when we talk about movies. But this is a film that's truly alive, and the presentation, the music, the performances. To me, watching the second time, it was sort of like watching The Shape of Things, but with drums instead of Rachel Weisz. It was just like the catalyst to watch Miles Teller, this transformation that he makes throughout the movie from sort of a mild-mannered kid to this, you know, this kid who really thinks he is the man, you know, and watching that evolution. I've never been a big Miles Teller fan, as everyone knows, but I think he's terrific in this movie. The editing, the final scenes in this movie, all the music scenes, J.K. Simmons, everything that he does in this movie is just top-notch, one of the best performances of the year. Whiplash is my number eight.
Okay. Number seven on my list was just mentioned by Colin, Under the Skin.
All right.
Told you you're not alone.
Everything that you described about the movie is accurate, and yet I don't know how to describe it.
Yep.
Nobody does.
And I loved it. I thought it was great. And you get to see Scarlett Johansson buck naked. So that right there.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. I don't quite know. I've seen it twice, and I'm befuddled by it.
Yep.
And yet completely compelled while watching it. I can't take my eyes off the screen. The score is hypnotic and weird.
We gave that best score, didn't we?
We did. Chicago Film Critics.
Incredible score. Weird and compelling. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's just a hard movie to describe. She just walks around, picks up guys, and then does something to them.
Yep.
And I still can't really figure out what it is. But
she's collecting their skins, maybe.
I'm confounded. See, I can't even talk about this movie. It's just so weird and out there, and I loved it. I thought it was great. Under the Skin, number seven on my list.
My number seven is The Babadook, the best horror film of the year. We haven't talked that much about horror at all in these top 20 lists. Not a lot of horror has come up. But The Babadook is by far the best one of the year. Came out of nowhere from Australia, directed by Jennifer Kent, and starring a woman by the name of Essie Davis, who gives one of the best performances of the year.
Extraordinary.
I hope this is the start of, you know, a great long career for her. I hope we see more of her. And even the kid is great. Noah Wiseman is beautifully cast. It's out in theaters now, right?
Yes.
And it's on demand, I
think. I think it might be on demand.
It's out on demand, for sure.
Yes, okay.
Yeah. It's this crazy movie about a storybook that comes to life, or a pop-up book, I should say. And it comes to life in very horrifying ways. It is The Babadook, B-A-B-A-D-O-O-K. Highly recommended. You want to see a really freaky, awesome, sort of darkly funny horror film. This is the best of the year.
Babadook, Duke, Duke.
Number seven on my list is maybe number seven on my list because I did get to see it twice, and that's David Fincher's Gone Girl. Which I declare is the definitive film about marriage, and what marriage is, even more so than War of the Roses. It was a great book by Gillian Flynn, and she did the adaptation that it maintains all the twists and makes some really great changes throughout the story, while keeping all the general stuff, including the controversial ending, intact. The ending, which I think sums up the movie perfectly. I know a lot of even fans of the book are not happy with that ending, but I think that's really sums everything up. Ben Affleck in sort of almost a meta casting in a way, a guy that, you know, is loved and hated and loved again. And Rosamund Pike is terrific. Neil Patrick Harris, you know, second only to Gyllenhaal as far as creepy on the year is concerned. It's a wonderful potboiler. It's beautifully put together. Again, the Gillian Flynn story is terrific. I can't wait to just keep watching over and over again.
Okay. All right, we got to take a break, and when we come back, we'll get to our top six and then do the worst, and we've got a lot of other categories to talk about. It's Nick DiGilio, Eric Childress, and Colin Suter are with me, as they are every year, for our annual movie roundup. Yeah. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower doing our year-end wrap-up here, 2014. And I'm joined live by Colin and Eric in studio. And so we're up to number six. And then, Colin, this is just getting a little weird. Because number six is The Babadook on my list. We're just off by one on a lot of these things. I thought The Babadook was fantastic, and I remember you telling me about it. Yeah. Where'd you see it?
Sundance.
Okay, I remember you telling me about it, and I was like, what the hell is Babadook?
Yeah.
And I want that book, man.
Babadook.
I want that book.
I bet they'll come out with one.
Oh, did you not get a Babadook Christmas card?
Oh, I got that.
Did you get the online Christmas card?
Oh, yeah, I did. I got the Babadook Christmas card, too. Well, anyway, the Babadook, as we mentioned, it is about this character in this children's pop-up book that comes to life in horrifying ways. S.C. Davis is her name, right?
Yes.
Extraordinary performance. Really amazing. Like fearless and great. And the kid is great, too.
Yeah.
This is a movie that is essentially, in my opinion, it's about grief. And it's about dealing with the death of a loved one. And what that does to you and how it can traumatize you, especially if you're a child. And, man, she says some stuff to this kid in the movie. I was like, oh, my God. But it's really scary. It's really creepy and top notch. And it's Jennifer Kent.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So, yeah, I thought it was great. And it's for me, it's like one of the best meditations on dealing with death or grief since The Fountain, since Aronofsky's The Fountain, which I think is one of the best movies ever made about dealing with death. But yeah, it's scary and it's cool as hell. And I love the character. I thought the character was really cool. And there's creepy stuff in this movie, man.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to put
great old school haunted house.
Absolutely. You know. Beautifully made.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
made a great double feature with The Conjuring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think this is better than The Conjuring, actually. Mm. Yeah, great stuff. By far, I agree with you, Colin. Best horror film of the year, without question. All right, that's my number seven. No, it was my number six.
Yeah. My number six is a movie called Blue Ruin. It came out in the spring of this year. Eric used the term hillbilly noir to describe Winter's Bone a few years ago. I think that applies here a little bit. It's a revenge film. Very, you know, guy who's not your typical revenge film character. going to try and carry out a plan to, you know, get back at these guys who, you know, harmed his family. It's very, very sort of simple, straight, deceptively simple, very straightforward film about revenge. Doesn't get too heavy-handed, doesn't get too graphic either. And the ending I thought was just a knockout. Directed by Jeremy Saulnier, who did another movie that I still haven't caught up with, and I can't remember the name of it right now. It came out a few years before this one. But this guy's a really interesting talent. Blue Ruin, it's on Netflix. You should watch it. It's great.
Okay.
Number six on my list is Snowpiercer, which was a science fiction film that, again, like you just said, it's just deceptively simple. I mean, it's a train, you know, global warming, now it's global freezing, trains going around the world, poor live in the back, rich live in the front. It's a movie that just continues to spring surprises on you. Even as simple as it is, that you want to get to each next car in this thing just to see what that next car is going to hold as far as progressing the story as they make their way to the front of the engine, and the way that the engine is sort of in a way is sort of a substitute for the sort of the higher power that everyone on this train sort of worships and needs to keep going, and whether or not there's even anyone at the front of the train running this thing anymore. It's filled with great action, really interesting original action sequences, sequence involving night vision that still just knocks me out. Tilda Swinton's hilarious in it. Chris Evans, John Hurt, Ed Harris, Jamie Bell. It's a wonderful cast. Octavia Spencer. I loved watching this movie. It's one of those science fiction movies that I think is going to stand the test of time. The more, you know, it's going to be one of these films that's going to be referenced amongst the great science fiction movies of an era. Snowpiercer.
Yeah, great movie. All right, number five on my list is Inherent Vice, Paul Thomas Anderson's adaptation of the Thomas Pynchon novel. It's weird and it's a mess, but I definitely recommend watching it twice. And that's how I felt about The Master, too. Like, The Master was just so, the first time you see The Master, you're like, what the hell's going on? And then it just comes together. I think Joaquin Phoenix is hilarious and great in this movie. I was befuddled by it. I laughed a lot. Josh Brolin, to me, is just amazing in the movie. But for me, the guy who steals this movie is Martin Short. I thought Martin Short was unbelievably hilarious. And in an unusual role that would never, you know, you would never think of casting him. Everybody knows Paul Thomas Anderson is my favorite filmmaker. And this has been getting mixed reviews. I know you guys didn't like it very much.
I've seen it three times, and I'm still just generally mixed
trying.
On
He's
it.
He's trying, man.
I'm trying. It's just once I get
trying.
To the two-hour part, I'm just like, I need something else besides weirdness. I need something to connect.
Yeah.
But I respect everyone else's love for it. I'm totally fine with everybody.
do a lot of people like it? I mean,
there are people that do really like it, and I think more the multiple viewing aspect helps, obviously, and it certainly helped me because the first time you're watching, you're kind of paying attention to the plot, which is not the way to watch the movie.
No.
Because the plot, it's like watching a David Lynch movie for the plot.
Yeah.
It does not go in anywhere, people, so don't pay attention to that. So,
Inherent Vice, number five on my list.
My number five is a movie that I made sure to catch up with in the theater again. I didn't get to see Gone Girl again, but I made sure to catch up with this one a second time, and the second time I saw it, all the flaws that I saw the first time were gone. And my number five is Interstellar. I know we're going to hear more about that later. But this is a movie that, you know, I don't think I appreciated enough the first time. But I think it played better for me the second time. You know, sort of the awkwardness of the script that I thought, you know, was there the first time. A couple sentimental moments that didn't quite hit me more. This is, like I said it before, I'll say it again. Great year for science fiction. This was the best science fiction film of the year.
Okay.
Number five on my list is Birdman, a film that I think is one of the best films ever made about actors. You know, not necessarily the theater per se, but the sort of the ego of actors. There are a lot of different angles we can sort of explore, and I'm sure we'll explore a few more a little bit later. But the sort of the idea, you know, people sort of talk about the whole, the movie, which is done by Alejandro González Iñárritu, is done in sort of, like Colin mentioned, of sort of a one take in a way. And I think the way that it's presented in the film, the idea that there's this constant struggle in the movie between the snootiness of the theater, the real, that's where the blue collar actors make their mark, and the sort of the blockbuster porn that Hollywood has become. And this is a movie that, is trying to show you that there can be a wonderful aesthetic to film acting as well. And that's what I think is being portrayed with the sort of the one shot of this film. I watched it with some friends over the weekend, and it kind of crapped the bed with them a little bit. The words pretentious and hate were brought up
really?
A few times. And I kind of see where they're going with that in a way, but I look at this movie in a completely different way. And like I said, it's one of the best films, if not the best film I've ever seen, about actors and about that ego that all of them carry with them, and that they all think that they have superpowers and they can move objects, and that they are God's gift to the universe. So.
Okay. Number four on my list is Cheap Thrills.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
I love this movie.
Apparently.
Love it. You didn't mention David Koechner.
I did not.
He's phenomenal.
Best performance he's ever given.
Oh, without
screen.
Question.
Yeah.
Without question. And the lovely Sarah Paxton.
Yes.
Who's very strange in this film. It's about these two guys that just hang out one night with this lunatic who dares them to do things for money. And it just gets crazier and crazier and crazier. And I really love this movie. I think it's just great. Obviously, it's number four on my list. And you're absolutely right. It's the best final shot of the year.
Yeah.
That final shot is unbelievable.
It's hilarious.
So, yeah. So, anyway, Cheap Thrill is number four on my list.
My number four is my favorite comedy of the year, my favorite animated film of the year, and that's The Lego Movie. Everything in it is awesome. It's just gag after gag after gag after gag, and then totally just pulls the rug out from under the audience with a third act that is genius. I don't know how they're going to do a sequel. I know they're doing one, but I don't know how that's going to happen, but it'd be interesting to see. And this is a movie that rewards with repeat viewings. I've watched it four times, and I still notice new jokes in it, and the Batman character is hilarious, and just I can't get enough of this movie. I love revisiting it over and over and over again, and I'm sure I will be for years to come.
The Lego Movie. All right,
yeah.
Cool.
Number four on my list is Citizen Four, the documentary about and starring Edward Snowden, basically. And this is a movie that I think, like the best of documentaries, forces you to confront a subject that you're either afraid to explore or you don't know all the details of. This is not a movie that is here to canonize anyone or condemn anyone. It's strictly a news piece putting everything front and center for you and letting you have the debate. A number of times with this movie we hear not just the president but other people talk about, if people want to have the debate, let's have the debate, but let's not release all these files and all this stuff. Well, here's your opportunity. If you want to have the debate, you can see this movie and see what Edward Snowden is presenting in his own words and also through the eyes of the journalists who are there. And I think that's the other sort of important, even more important aspect of the story. We can all talk about the secrets and the NSA files and all that kind of stuff. But to me, this is a very important film about how journalism is supposed to happen. They get the scoop, and they have to sit there and they have to disseminate the information and decide what the American public needs to hear, what needs to be kept secret. It's a responsibility in journalism in the highest form. It's a film that I think ranks up there with like All the President's Men as far as watching journalists do their job and doing it in a responsible way, unlike the way we've seen this whole Sony hacking scandal go down recently, which absolutely disgusts me. But Citizen Four is one of the best films of the year. It's number four.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got our top three movies of the year to tell you about. And we got a break here for weather and traffic on 720 WGN.
What happens if the engine stops?
We all freeze and die.
But will it stop or will it stop?
No, no!
Can you tell us why?
The engine is eternal, yes! The engine is
eternal. Oh, man. People are probably at home going, what the hell is this?
It's a kid's movie.
Yeah. All right. That's from the Snow. That's from Snowpiercer, of course. The great Tilda Swinton.
That's not Tilda Swinton.
Oh, no, it's not Tilda Swinton.
That's Alison Pill.
It's Alison Pill. That's right.
Making one of the creepiest faces I've ever seen someone singing a song. Oh, boy.
Oh, terrific stuff. All right, it's Colin and Eric are with me, and we're doing our annual roundup of the best and worst movies of the year. And we continue with our top three. Number three on my list is Birdman. Everybody who's talked about it, you know, it's extraordinary. A tour de force for Michael Keaton, who's just great in it. And in fact, everybody's good in this movie. And it's also... It's beautifully shot. We've all talked about the cinematography, the way it was made to look like it was one take. Very original. It's also very funny. And this guy, this director, is not known for his comedies.
No. Well, that Laugh Riot Babel. Which
Yeah. 21 Grams was hilarious.
Hilarious.
So I just think it's great. I love the style of it. And everything, Eric, you said about, you know, having been in theater and having acted. There are scenes in Birdman that are just the scenes where they're rehearsing alone, where Edward Norton joins the cast and they were rehearsing, is hilarious and is great. I mean, like, really into it. I'm telling you, one of my favorite scenes of the year is Michael Keaton in his tighty-whities running through New York.
Yeah.
To get to the other side of the theater, and then makes his entrance through the house.
Yes.
So
with the fake gun.
With the fake gun. Great stuff. Beautifully done. And Michael Keaton is a lock for a nomination.
He's going to win.
You think he's going to win?
He's going
to
win.
Okay. So Birdman, number three on my list.
My number three is Life Itself, which was on CNN tonight. I hope you all watched it if you didn't see this movie in the theater. You know, it's about one of the greats. I mean, Roger Ebert, I don't think I'd be here if it wasn't for him. But, you know, I think I'll talk about Steve James. Nick said one of the best director, you know, documentary filmmakers working today. I think he is the best documentary filmmaker working today. And lest anyone thinks that's another Chicago bias, let me just run down a few films. Hoop Dreams, Stevie, The Interrupters, and now Life Itself. And I'm sure there's a bunch of other ones in there that I'm forgetting about. That's an unbeatable documentary resume there. You know, he got Roger's essence. He got everything right. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
Number three on my list is The Lego Movie. Absolute joy watching this movie. The experience of watching this movie and how funny it was and the direction that it takes in the third act just filled me with just an endless smile. I think I actually walked out of the theater and did the Judd Nelson Breakfast Club fist bump at the end. I'm just like, yeah, that's, damn it, yes, that was a great movie. And subsequent viewings have just, you know, expanded upon its greatness. It's a gag a minute. It reminded me a lot of Who Framed Roger Rabbit in the way that it's able to bring together all of the Lego characters in a way, even though, you know, you have the Star Wars character, the DC characters, the interaction between Superman and Green
Lantern.
That's a good
analogy.
Yeah. I mean, I think everything about this movie works. Liam Neeson, maybe the best voice performance of the year, in a dual role in a way.
Yeah.
And again, Cal mentioned the ending of this movie. You don't expect a movie to be this funny and then immediately switch over to where you have a tear running down your cheek. And then it also it closes on one of my favorite last lines of the year, which again kind of rang home to me as well, that the final line of this movie is terrific. But the Lego Movie is the best animated film of the year,
okay.
Number three on my list.
All right, number two on my list is Whiplash. I don't even know what to say, man. All I know is that when it ended, I went, verbally went, oh my God, when it ended, that final moment. And it's an extraordinary piece of work. And Miles Teller's terrific in it. I want to mention Paul Reiser. I like Paul Reiser in this movie as well. I like that they put Raisinets in their popcorn. I think that's kind of cool. But, I mean, obviously, the dominating performance in this movie is J.K. Simmons. And some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth.
There's no Marvel's bar down there.
You ever had a teacher or a boss like that?
No. Not that crazy.
I had a boss like that.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it goes into this, you know, like, you want to talk about a movie that kind of takes a turn.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that coming. You know, like, what I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah.
Like, the final third of the movie, I was like, wow, this is going in a direction I didn't think it was going to go into, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's kid wants to be a great drummer, goes to this conservatory, and J.K. Simmons is his teacher, and he rides him, just to say the least, he rides him. One of the best, I mean, my second favorite movie of the year. I loved it. And J.K. Simmons, it just keeps getting better. I've seen it 5 times now. And it just keeps getting better every time I see it. So Whiplash, number 2.
My number 2 is Boyhood. You know, a movie that, again, gets better with every viewing, I think. The project itself is extraordinary. It's, you know, it's a pretty amazing thing to watch. And I like that Linklater doesn't show off with it. You know, you have a scene with a kid, you know, talking to his mom. They cut to the next scene and he's a year older and they don't like bring that much attention to it. It's just very presented in a very just straightforward manner, not manipulative in any way. You know, and I think it's this is the movies that this year, my top 2 movies this year, and we'll get to my number 1. You guys know what it is, but whatever. It's really about, you know, the people in your lives who have a great influence over you, whether you realize it at the moment or not. You know, there's a point in Boyhood where, you know, the kid, when he's like 16 or 17, where he says, you know, can everybody just get off my back for a day? And really what's going on in this film is everybody is contributing to what he will become and who he will become. And, you know, he just doesn't realize it yet. And it's really just about that kind of adult influence in your life that helps, you know, shape who you are. And I think that's just a beautiful theme to, you know, to throw a 12-year project into. And it's just, I think it's becoming one of my favorite movies. So yeah, my number 2 is Boyhood.
That was the last movie that Roy Leonard reviewed on my show.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he loved it. So it was one of the best movies he's ever seen in his life. Yeah. So that, it has a special spot in my heart just for that, too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
All right, Eric, number 2.
Well, number 2 is Life Itself. You know, Colin, you know, alluded to the fact that, you know, all of us have some connection to Roger Ebert one way or another, whether we watched a show or we knew him or we got to know him a little bit later in life. I was talking to a really good friend of mine as I was telling him that I hadn't quite decided what my number 1 was going to be, and I mentioned that this was a film that was in the running, and he kind of smiled and winked at me, and he's like, don't go with your heart. Don't go with your heart. He's kind of, you know, joking around a little bit, you know, go with your head. And I have to counter that, because I think the whole idea, and I think one of the things that this movie gets across, is the idea that, you know, movies are part of us, and if we're only using our brain and not our empathy and emotion and, you know, everything that our own personal lives bring to the movies as much as they bring to us, then we're not doing it right. You know, we're not, you know, if we're just film critics, you know, what does it take, you know, to happen in a person's life for someone to become a critic, to quote Michael Keaton in Birdman. you know, it's all labels, just labeling. But Roger Ebert didn't label movies. He had genuine passion, and this is not just a documentary about that particular passion, but about life. And it really is a film that you can watch not just as a personal piece, but a film you can watch as a really entertaining 2-hour story about someone who lived his life to the absolute fullest. Things that we didn't know that weren't in the book, that we are revelations of the movie, make the experience all the more gratifying. It's really personal. It's beautiful. It's hilarious at times. The whole section between him and Siskel is really just gold. This is an absolutely beautiful movie that is made with Steve James with all the heart in the world. So number two is Life Itself.
Okay. All right, we got to take a quick break. We got the news coming up, and then our top movie of the year, number one on our list. Eric and Colin are here, and then we'll continue with the worst, and we've got our subcategories to get to as well, right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. That's from Whiplash. That is indeed the song, Whiplash.
Not my tempo, Nick.
Yeah. You're dragging.
Yep. Were you rushing or were you dragging? Movie rules, wow. Man. All right, let's do a recap real quick because we are up to our number ones. And Colin suggested that he go first this time. Because he has a hunch that Eric and I might have the same number one.
He's gonna be awfully embarrassed if we don't.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really
so
strange.
But let's go back and we'll start with 20 and work our way up. And number 20 on my list was The Raid 2, 19 Dead Snow, Red versus Dead, 18 Snow, Gone Girl, 17 Snowpiercer, 16 The Lego Movie, 15, Skeleton Twins, 14, Life Itself, 13, Godzilla, 12, A Most Violent Year, 11, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, 10, Nightcrawler, 9, Boyhood, 8, Obvious Child, 7, Under the Skin, 6, The Babadook, 5, Inherent Vice, 4, Cheap Thrills, 3, Birdman, and number 2, what you just heard, Whiplash. Colin?
My number 20, We Are the Best, 19, Ernest and Celestine, 18, Gone Girl, 17, Locke, 16, Birdman, 15, Citizen Four, 14, The Congress, 13, A Most Violent Year, 12, Joe, 11, Ida, 10, How to Train Your Dragon 2, 9, Selma, 8, Under the Skin, 7, The Babadook, 6, Blue Ruin, 5, Interstellar, 4, The Lego Movie, 3, Life Itself, and 2, Boyhood.
Okay, my number 20 is Calvary, 19 Cheap Thrills, 18 Edge of Tomorrow, 17 How to Train Your Dragon 2, 16 Nightcrawler, 15 Wish I Was Here, 14 Noah, 13 The Congress, 12 Mommy, 11 Force Majeure, 10 Wild, 9 Foxcatcher, 8 Whiplash, 7 Gone Girl, 6 Snowpiercer, 5 Birdman, 4 Citizen 4, 3, The Lego Movie, and 2, Life Itself.
Okay. All right, Colin.
All right. My number one is Whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
The most exciting cinematic experience I've had all year. And it sort of just came out of nowhere for me. I mean, I heard it was good, but I didn't know it was going to be that good. Everything is firing on all cylinders here. I mean, all the performances, the editing, the cinematography, the writing. It's a tight script. I mean, Damien Chazelle... definitely has a command over the medium that is, you know, extraordinary, and clearly knows his music. I mean, clearly, I mean, he's already written a few movies that have a lot to do with music, and so he knows what he's talking about in this world. And again, it's that theme of that influence over your life, the guy who you're that mentor that you want to. Sort of impress, and you don't realize the impact that his presence in your life is having on you at the time. It's beautifully explored, this theme. I mean, we've seen the standard teacher-student movie before, and the formula gets pretty tiresome. This is a guy who does not apologize for his methods at all, and the end of the movie is uplifting. For both of these characters achieve something great that you could criticize this, J.K. Simmons' character for his methods. But at the end, there's kind of no arguing against him, really, in many ways. This is just by the end of this movie. I mean, my heart was racing. There's a sequence in this movie where I was where Miles Teller is trying to get to a gig on time. Man. And I almost had a heart attack
during
this scene.
Me too. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, this is not hyperbole when I say that this movie has some very Scorsese-esque flourishes in it, with the directing and the editing. It's an amazing piece of work, and I've watched it, like you, Nick, I think 5 times now, and it gets better with every viewing, and it's just phenomenal.
Yep. Okay, Whiplash. Number one, Whiplash. All right. You want to say it?
No, I want to hear you say it.
All right, my number one movie of 2014 is Christopher Nolan's Interstellar.
Yeah. Soak it in, Eric.
I was profoundly moved by this movie. I didn't, because I don't think Nolan is, I think he's a technically pretty brilliant director, okay? But he's also, his movies are a little cold, Inception is an awesome movie, but there's not a lot of emotion. So I went in thinking, okay, this is just going to be very cool. It'll be a very cool movie. But I was bawling my eyes out during this movie. Interstellar, Matthew McConaughey plays a pilot. Who, along with Anne Hathaway, goes on this trip to a wormhole to because the Earth is dying, to find another place for Earthlings to live. And he's away for a very long time. Jessica Chastain, again, is great in this movie. But that's essentially what it's about. But, I mean, that's the plot. But it's a much more profound movie than that. I mean, there's so much stuff going on in this movie. I think I saw it twice in 2 days. I didn't expect to be as moved by it as I was. I mean, it's obviously a great piece of science fiction. There's no question about it. I mean, it's filled with great ideas and really cool special effects. And it's kind of got everything you'd expect from a science fiction movie by Christopher Nolan. But there's more to it. There's an emotion to it that I was rocked by. And I think everybody in it is great. And I like the concept. It's very original. And this, I guess I like all Christopher Nolan movies with one title.
Let's start with the word "in."
Yeah, that's right. Insomnia. Inception. Yeah. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, obviously, my number one is Christopher Nolan's Interstellar. It must be 2015 because the Cubs are going to win the World Series, and Nick's number one is a Christopher Nolan movie. So the world must be ending. No, Nick just doesn't like the Batman movie, so that's cool. Mm-hmm. But this is a movie that, I didn't want to just be the broken record Christopher Nolan fanboy guy and put another one of his films number one on my list. But this is a film that I have not stopped thinking about since I saw it.
Me too.
And one of the reasons I have to write a review for it for our book that we write for. And I just want to make sure that I have all the ideas in the film straight in my head and make sure that those ideas are not betrayed by some perfunctory explanation or meaning that I'm giving to them that's not in the film. When clearly there's a lot there. This is a film that has, while it has a lot of religious symbolism in it and religious ideas, this is a movie that takes the real interesting path of taking us on this extraordinary science fiction journey that's not about finding a higher power. It's not about finding God. It's not about finding aliens. The heroes in this movie are us. While the concept of angels is explored early in the movie and paid off to great emotional effect later in the film, the connection between what we discover is that we're the ones that have to save this planet. We cannot sit here and rely on some force, whatever we believe in doesn't matter. We can't sit around and waiting for that person to, tell us what to do. We have to act and do something about it. And ultimately, Anne Hathaway gives this really wonderful monologue about love, even while I was watching, I'm just like, that's a really interesting, how is that going to pay off? What does that mean? Why is this stuck in the middle of this movie? And the more you think about it, the more how it all it turns around and makes sense. And to me, what this movie ultimately comes down to is that we are not alone as long as we have each other.
Yeah.
Interstellar.
Yeah. Best movie of the year. I totally agree. All right. How about that?
Yeah.
Did it again.
Yeah.
It was a good year.
Yeah.
Good job, everyone.
Right. All right. Let's do the worst.
Oh, all right.
All right. I'll start with number 20 and work my way up.
Let's do this.
And I'll just fly through them.
Yeah. Sure.
All right. Number 20 is Blended. 19, Amazing Spider-Man 2. 18, A Haunted House 2. 17, Endless Love. 16, That Awkward Moment. Ugh. 15, Oculus. 14, Exodus. 13, TMNT, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. 12, Ouija. 11, Sex Tape. 10, Annie. Ugh.
Yeah. Oh, you went and saw Annie.
Yes, I did. Man. 9, Tusk. 8, Paranormal Activity Marked Ones. 7, Transformers 4. 6, Dracula Untold. 5, Tammy. 4, I, Frankenstein. 3, Neighbors. 2, A Million Ways to Die in the West. And number 1, Left Behind. Okay, Colin?
All right. Number 20, Words and Pictures. 19, Divergent. 18, Transformers 4. 17, Earth to Echo. 16, Amazing Spider-Man 2. 15, The Other Woman. 14, Left Behind. 13, Vampire Academy. 12, Endless Love. 11, Need for Speed. 10, Angriest Man in Brooklyn. Sorry, Robin Williams.
Yeah.
9, About Last Night. 8, Fading Gigolo. 7, Annabelle. 6, I, Frankenstein. 5, Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return. 4, Ouija. 3, Legend of Hercules from Rennie Harlan. 2, Blended. And 1, Kirk Cameron, Saving Christmas.
All right. Eric.
Okay. Number 20, The Signal. 19, Oculus. 18, Before I Go to Sleep. 17, Think Like a Man 2. 16, The Bagman with John Cusack and Robert De Niro. 15, Jimmy All Is By My Side. 14, The Last of Robin Hood. 13, The Possession of Michael King. 12, Divergent. 11, Rays. 10, The Amazing Spider-Man 2. 9, The Other Woman. 8, Tammy. 7, About Last Night. 6, Left Behind. 5, Addicted. 4, Endless Love. 3, Vampire Academy. 2, The Giver. And number 1, God's Not Dead.
All right. We got to take a break for weather and traffic. When we come back, we've got our subcategories to get to. We're wrapping up the year here in movies on 720 WGN.
I came in from the wilderness.
Reach for the form.
Yeah.
Come here, she said. I'll give you shelter from the storm.
Bill Murray singing along with Bob Dylan from St. Vincent. Which is a movie that I really liked a lot. Just missed my top 20, and I think Bill Murray's great in it. So much fun to watch him in that movie. It opens up with a really funny joke, too, like the joke that he tells at the beginning.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes.
Paint my porch. that's Eric and Colin. We just finished up our best and worst list. Now we're going to go down our subcategories as we put these together every year. And so let's do this. Okay, best or funniest gag. I put Little Groot dancing.
Oh,
Guardians of the Galaxy. Did you guys, hey, by the way, have you ever texted Groot?
No. Did you get an I am Groot? Really?
If you text Groot, he just every single time it says I am Groot.
That's great.
Yeah. I don't know who's running it. It's an 855 number or an 866 number. But I have it awesome in my phone, and if you text Groot, he just goes, he immediately comes back, I am Groot.
Vin Diesel's finest performance.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I got a few, but I'll just say Josh Brolin with the chocolate-covered banana and Inherent Vice. It's a pretty funny shot. That's a funny shot.
The look on Phoenix's face.
Yes.
That shot is what makes it.
It is. I mean, he's constantly eating.
Yeah.
Yes.
Brolin is constantly, has something in his mouth the entire movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or drinking.
Yeah.
Mine is the conversation in the trip to Italy about The Dark Knight Rises that Rob Brydon and Steve Coogan has.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see. Best line of dialogue or favorite lines of dialogue. Everything that comes out of J.K. Simmons' mouth and Whiplash, but particularly Parker, this is not your boyfriend's...
Yeah. Yeah, do not... early.
Yeah.
The You Can Say That Again gag from They Came Together. Ethan Hawke talking to his kids about how they should talk to each other in boyhood.
Okay.
I don't know Pauline Kael. I never knew Pauline Kael. But F Pauline Kael, Rick Kogan in Life Itself.
Oh, yeah, good old Rick. Best fight, I said the car chase fight in Raid 2.
Yeah, I said the prison scene in Raid 2.
I put anything in the Raid 2.
Yeah, really, really, seriously. Like, what else would you put?
Right.
Yeah. Best movie that didn't deserve to be a bomb. I put two.
Mm-hmm.
Snowpiercer and Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, I put Edge of Tomorrow.
I put Edge of Tomorrow and Muppets Most Wanted.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Best quality kill. And Godzilla blowing flames down the mouth of the
that's a good one.
Of the monster.
That's a good one.
That moment, that's I went great. Nuts during that part.
Yeah, I just put anything from Raid 2 because I couldn't think of anything else. But yeah,
well, there's without spoiling anything, there's a moment in Gone Girl.
Oh yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
All right,
that's all I can say.
Best ensemble, I pick Birdman.
Birdman.
Best brainless movie. I picked Walk of Shame.
Oh, you like that movie?
I did.
Oh,
I
wow.
thought it was funny as hell, actually.
Okay.
Did I see Walk of Shame?
Nobody did,
Elizabeth
really.
Banks.
Elizabeth Banks.
Like, almost went, pretty much went straight to video.
Did not see that one.
Yeah.
Okay, I put They Came Together.
Okay, I put The Raid 2.
Okay. Worst smart films, and I finally caught up with these, the Nymphomaniac movies.
Mm.
Please.
Not even the Uma Thurman scene?
Uma Thurman was
great.
Uma Thurman's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I put Fading Gigolo.
I put Under the Skin.
Movies that made me the hungriest. A Trip to Italy.
And Chef.
And Chef. Yeah.
I put Snowpiercer.
You like those protein bars?
You don't want to try one of those.
It's like black Jello. It's like
licorice Jello.
Yeah,
but then the food gets better as they get up to the car.
Right, sure.
They're always eating and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
that's
it's offered a steak by the end. So.
That's true.
Most underrated critically, I said The Babadook.
That did very well.
Is it doing?
Oh yeah,
is it?
Critically it's doing very
well.
Well,
yeah.
I'm wrong.
I put How to Train Your Dragon 2, which I'm sure got great reviews.
Yeah,
but
that did too.
You know, but
okay, I put Wish I Was Here because everyone had their knives ready.
Biggest surprise, I said The Lego Movie.
Yeah, The Lego Movie.
I put Tyler Perry in Gone Girl.
That's a good one.
That is a good one. Yep.
That's a good one. Biggest disappointment, I put The Box Trolls.
I put Big Eyes.
I put Inherent Vice.
Biggest waste of an actor or actress, Christian Bale in Exodus.
Amy Adams in Big Eyes.
I got two. I got Everyone in the Monuments Men and Kate Winslet in Divergent.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Most romantic scene, I said anything between Chad and Roger.
That's good.
And Life Itself.
That's good.
Yeah.
Because
oh,
it's a love story.
It's
a love
story. Yeah, you're right. The reuniting of the parents and How to Train Your Dragon 2.
That's good. While it doesn't end up very well, I put The Sugar Storm in Gone Girl. I think it's a beautiful scene.
Okay.
You know.
Let's see. Where am I? Okay. Least necessary sequel or remake. I've got four of them.
There's a lot this year.
Mm-hmm.
Left Behind, RoboCop, About Last Night, and Endless Love.
Yeah, I went with a sequel. I went Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I got RoboCop and Horrible Bosses 2.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Sexiest shot or moment or scene. I just wrote anytime Scarlett Johansson's naked and in Under the Skin.
Yeah, the seduction scenes. Yeah,
I put
amazing.
Scarlett Johansson in the mirror Under the Skin.
Oh,
I may not like the movie, but I am a man.
Of course. I don't. You know what? I didn't even. I skipped worst biopic.
Okay.
What did you guys?
I put Big Eyes.
Okay.
Jimmy Y'all is by my side. The Hendrix one.
Oh God. Yeah. Let's make a movie about Jimi Hendrix and we don't have any music.
Mm-hmm. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Best use of music, Whiplash.
The first and last songs, bookending Boyhood.
The lip-syncing scene of Skeleton Twins.
Favorite tearjerker moment, half of Interstellar.
Yeah. I just put Stay from Interstellar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got that.
Yeah, well, that scene, I mean, that's the key.
Which was one of the scenes you were not favorable on.
No,
the
second scene. Of that.
Okay.
Not the first scene.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have McConaughey saying goodbye in Interstellar. I have the ending of the Lego movie, and I have the moment in Life Itself when he tells Steve James, I'm fading.
Yeah.
Favorite bad movie? I said Left Behind.
Yeah, Left Behind.
Expendables 3.
Worst actor, Nicolas Cage, left behind.
Darren Duane from Saving Christmas, who's also the director.
I put Brenton Thwaites, who is in Oculus, The Signal, The Giver, and I didn't even see Maleficent, but he's in that too.
Wow.
And he was also in 2012's Blue Lagoon, The Awakening.
Wow. The Awakening?
Lifetime. You didn't see Blue Lagoon,
right.
The Awakening?
Lifetime, yeah.
Worst actress, Melissa McCarthy, Tammy.
Cameron Diaz for Annie and The Other Woman.
Rebecca DaCosta in The Bagman.
Okay.
Trust me.
Okay. Worst young adult based book based film, Divergent.
Yeah, Divergent.
The Giver.
Mm. Best monologue, Anne Hathaway's monologue about love and Interstellar.
J.K. Simmons' Good Job monologue in Whiplash.
I put Harvey Keitel has one in the Congress where he's talking to Robin Wright Penn as she's going through her digital process.
Yeah,
it's a beautiful moment.
Okay. Most nail-biting moment, docking the ship in Interstellar.
Getting to the gig on time in Whiplash.
No.
The fire alarm and the front desk calls in Citizen 4.
Worst or most awkward casting choice, Johnny Depp in Tusk.
This one was bad enough when it came out. It's even more awkward later in the year. Robin Williams in Angriest Man in Brooklyn.
Mm.
Kiefer Sutherland in Pompeii. Yeah.
All right, we got a break here. Eric and Colin will be back and after the news coming up right next on WGN. Beautiful score. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I got to get this soundtrack. The best Hans Zimmer score since Thin Red Line.
Yeah. That's from Interstellar, which happened to be number one on my list and on Eric's list for the best film of the year. And we're going down our subcategory list here. And where were we?
Film you want to see a sequel to.
Oh. Okay, film you would like to see a sequel to right now, Godzilla.
The Lego Movie.
The Lego Movie.
Worst faith-based film, Left Behind.
Saving Christmas.
God's Not Dead.
Best ending or final moment, Cheap Thrills. But I also really love the ending of Whiplash and Birdman.
Yeah, Whiplash was mine.
I mean, I'm not kidding. I said, oh my God, when it ended.
Yeah, I put Whiplash.
Okay. Worst third act, Left Behind.
Funniest third
I'm blinking
maybe.
My lights.
It's hilarious.
Mine was more of a disappointment third act. Big Hero 6.
Yeah, that's mine too.
Oh, really?
Hero 6.
Yeah. Okay. Movie that deserves more awards attention. I got a tie. I put Obvious Child in Skeletons Wins.
Okay.
Because I think the performances deserve all kinds of awards.
Yeah, I put Interstellar.
I did too, Interstellar.
Okay. Best retro film going experience could be flashback, movie code, music box, any of that. I chose Field of Dreams at my screening.
Too.
That's a good one. City Lights at the Symphony Center with the orchestra.
Oh, cool.
Phenomenal.
I put a chance to host Rear Window at the Oak Grove Cinema that I did in February, and then to close out the year, Die Hard at the Movie Co.
That was a blast.
Great. That was great.
Seeing that movie on the big screen with a nice big crowd was pretty unbelievable.
With Twinkies. Yeah.
Yes.
With Twinkies, that's
yes.
right.
Yes.
And then looking forward to most in 2015, I don't even think I have to ask Eric what's on that list. But mine is Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah, mine is Mad Max Fury Road and Episode 7.
Yeah, I'm not going to deny Mad Max I want to see, but Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Now, did you guys get my email for the next?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
The question was, do you think people are going to camp out?
Yeah, for Episode 7. Or, you know, will this happen again? Will this phenomenon happen again? Or are we past that now? Because the people people used to camp out for the Star Wars movies are now 10 years older.
It's also coming out in December.
I don't think that matters.
Well, it could. I mean, it could be
a geek sometimes.
Yeah, but there's generational things. I mean, I don't know. I'm predicting not months in advance. I'm not saying I don't think people are going to queue up in like.
You're not
going
to get the people flying in from Australia again to camp out for the first screening in America.
Yeah, I don't know.
Which happened.
It happened
with Phantom Menace.
Yeah, no, Phantom Menace was out of control. I mean, that was just that was totally something that does not surprise me at all.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to see that this time.
I think it's 16 years apart. You know?
Yeah. It was 16 years of, you know,
yeah.
hype.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so, and that people lost their minds.
Yeah. Right.
And, but this one, I think there'll be some hardcore people out there, but I think it has everything to do with the fact that it's coming out at Christmas. None of the Star Wars movies came out at Christmas.
They were all
summer releases. Like,
right.
they were all May releases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that will add to it. Like, if it's like it is outside right now,
yeah.
you know,
right.
I don't care how hardcore of a Star Wars fan you are,
right.
you're not going to be out. So I think that's going to limit it. I think the fact that it's coming out in December is going to limit some of the hardcore fans.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just find it interesting to see, like, if, you know, or do we still have that culture where people will camp out for days or months on end to see a film?
Well, it all depends on if North Korea threatens
the
release.
Yeah,
right. Then
you know, it was funny because when I went to go see the Sith.
Yeah.
Revenge of the Sith. Mm-hmm. They screened it at, I want to say McClurg?
No, the Clones was at
Clones McClurg. Was at the McClurg,
yeah.
right. Okay, so Clones, there were a ton of people out there the day of that screening, the morning of that screening.
Yeah, that's right.
There were a ton of people out there.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure when Episode 7 comes out, you're going to see lines all day long in front of the theaters. But, like, months in advance, I don't know. I don't know.
I like the December thing makes sense to me. That you might not see. But then again, you know,
well,
California.
Florida, California,
right.
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So I think you'll see people start lining up in June.
Really? June?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'll just say June.
Okay.
June?
I'll say June.
That's what I'm... Well, that happened with Phantom Menace. But that was, you know, 16 years in the making.
I think when you get to the 6 month point, I think you'll start seeing some crazies.
Mm.
You know, the crazies always come out of the woodwork at some point, and it is Star Wars. And as much as
now,
Star Wars geek I am,
are they doing another? Are they going to reveal another trailer?
Is it that going to be that late?
Or maybe?
June?
Oh yeah, maybe it will be early.
Well, then whatever, some big Fox movie or some big blockbuster comes out, and
not Fox, Disney.
That's right. It's
right.
Disney.
It's Disney.
Yep.
Yeah. So, well, maybe probably with the Avengers, the release of the Avengers in first week of May.
That's okay. The first week of May.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a Marvel Disney.
Oh,
release.
That would make total sense.
What are some of the big ones coming out for 2015? Obviously, besides
you got Avengers, 7. Star Wars, your Mad Max. I just made like this list on Letterboxd, the movies I was most looking forward to this year. There's a lot of those type of movies coming out. I mean, Pitch Perfect 2 is coming out.
Dan Shagru is very pleased about that. He loves Pitch Perfect.
Should be, don't you love Pitch Perfect?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
not quite as much as Dan Shagru.
Okay, well, yeah, Pitch Perfect rules. Yeah, I'm kind of. I always start drawing a blank on 6 months in advance. But no, Star Wars, Mad Max.
I got to tell you, man, those Mad Max trailers are making me nuts.
Yeah,
they're insane.
I just can't.
I just got the Blu-ray for Christmas, the trilogy all in one, and I watched Thunderdome projected on my wall last night. I don't care what anybody says; that movie rules.
It's great.
It's great. It's got so much imagination. It's so innovative.
Master Blaster.
Yes. I mean, just the opening credits when you see all the characters' names, and I just get giddy. Like, you know, this crazy...
I think Thunderdome is great.
I know, but I
defend that one too.
It's weird because like when it came out, it was highly praised. You know, it got a strong critical reception. I remember Siskel and Ebert both had it on their top 10 list.
Yeah.
And then in the years since, it is sort of like people have sort of are down on it. Like, and the first thing I hear when I ask people, why do you hate Thunderdome? First thing they say, it's the kids. And all right, whatever. But
that's always the first response.
Yeah, that's always the first. Oh, the kids. Okay, whatever. What about the kids? It carries a story along.
Yeah.
It's a story film. It's not just car chases. It's not George Miller just remaking Road Warrior, which is, I'm sure, was what everybody wants. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm. Fury Road, man. That's coming.
Okay.
Here's some of your big movies coming out, by the way, you're asked. I mean, you got Mad Max, Pitch Perfect 2. You got a new Cameron Crowe movie. It's coming out in May. Jurassic World, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
A big thing. There's another Terminator movie coming out.
Oh, God.
Ant-Man.
Oh, yeah. Didn't they just get the teaser trailer?
Yes, a tiny ant-sized trailer. Have you seen it?
It's just Paul Rudd standing there, right?
Yeah.
Who directed that? Who ended up directing that? It wasn't
Peyton
Edgar
Reed.
Who?
Peyton Reed.
Oh, Peyton Reed.
Down with Love.
Wow, what's
he been
doing, man?
Those last few have not been inspiring. You did The Breakup.
Ugh.
Yeah, and there's one after that that's not
We did League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, didn't he?
No, that's not Rowdy Harrington or one of those guys.
Really? Wasn't Rowdy Harrington.
Not Rowdy Harrington. There's another guy with a similar name.
Okay.
That I don't think has worked since. Yeah.
All right. Well, then we got great stuff coming up here in 2015 that we're looking forward to. Maybe we'll leave your or email your lists to Dan, and we'll put them up on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
So everybody can check them out. We did our best movies and worst movies of the year, and of course our subdivisions. I was thinking of Rush.
Yeah.
of our sub categories. Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. So, but that's it for this year, and we'll do it again next year, guys.
Sounds good.
And we'll talk Monday morning.
Yes.
Yep. With the latest movie reviews and the Golden Globes, because Sunday night are the Golden Globes, so we'll recap that as well.
Sounds good.
All right, Eric, Colin, thank you guys. Always a blast. We'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN.